Okay, we are live. Guys, this is crazy.
Very exciting.
Not just Caroline and I today. It is a special day because we have Eloisa James, as you can probably see from the title. We are so excited. Eloisa, I guess you can just introduce yourself and take it from there.
Thank you. Thanks, Anna. I'm Eloisa James, and I write historical romance, and I've been writing historical romance for a long time. So I'm kind of feeling like a dinosaur these days just because of the length of my career.
Yeah.
But I'm also a Shakespeare professor, so I've kind of got two things going at the same time.
Oh, love. I mean, I could tell that from this book, the Shakespeare. Yeah. I was a theater major, and I was eating up all the Shakespeare in this. I kind of love.
Well, I try to just have – you don't – just – in case anyone's afraid, you don't have to know any Shakespeare. It just sort of leaks in because I teach it every day.
Gosh, well, I feel like that's the theme for historical romance. People think you have to know all these things before you read it, and then you really don't. You can kind of just go in blind. But then if you do know, it's fun. Mm-hmm. But, yeah.
The genre has changed a lot over the years.
We're interested in, like, that. Because, obviously, you said you've been writing for so long. And, I mean, we've read your earlier books. And, you know, we've read Viscount in Love. And so I think it's just so fascinating to see, like, the experience of, like, writing a book 10 years ago versus today, or, like, what the genre feels like now opposed to then, or, like, what you could maybe get away with, or, like, what readers wanted then versus now.
Right. Well, let's just go 10 years is nothing. Let's try 1999, okay?
Yeah.
This is when I wrote Poet and Pleasures. It came out in 2000. And I mean, it was the Wild West compared to now, right? It really was. So I'm following all those books that you read last year, like The Flame and the Flower, or, you know, the really foundational ones. So those are earlier. But then by the time you get to, you know, 1999, 2000, there's a really established readership, a huge readership. You know, Julia Quinn is publishing a lot. Lisa Kleypas is selling, you know, tons. They're both very, very popular. And I wrote a book in order to pay off my student loans because I loved romance. I was like, I'm going to write a historical romance and I'm going to pay off my student loans.
Gosh,
and it actually worked.
Amazing.
It went up to auction and it sold for $2,000 over my student loans. And I just have to add, as a professor here, that in the past you didn't have the student loans that kids have huge amounts. So, but I mean, I was very grateful. I had to write three books for that. But I, you know, you could write whatever you wanted. Like there was much less attention to subjects. Mm-hmm. There was much less attention to how people behave. There was, of course, no question about consent, or diversity, or any of the things that your generation is extremely interested in and has, you know, brought to prominence in really wonderful ways. And so my focus veered between being historically accurate. So my hero in Poet and Pleasures is convinced that his wife was adulterous. So he actually calls her a whore, which, you know, he had the right historically to kill her and he would have got off. She was adulterous. But anyway, I just read these things and I was like, well, I don't like men in a nightshirt. That's gross. So I put him in pajamas. Of course, pajamas didn't even exist at the time. But I was like,
you're so real for that, though.
I was going to say the nightshirts.
Oh,
I don't know if I can get on board. No, that's not sexy.
Naked, you know, after I got the raft of letters saying, your hero is absolutely unhistorical. He never would have been in pajamas. And it's so mean that he calls his wife that. I realized that historical romance was existing in this really interesting moment, I would say, for that first decade when I was writing, when readers were super interested in historical fact. I mean, I would have a conversation on the ballroom floor about, like, the discovery of the poles, and somebody would write me an email and say, hey, that happened 6 months before that conversation on the ballroom floor. I'm like, whoa, you know. But at the same time, and this was a lesson forever, historical romance, like contemporary romance, it doesn't matter when it's written, it has to reflect our current sexual mores. It has to reflect what's going on between people now, men, women, whatever it is, doesn't matter. So I even though I was trying to be historically accurate, there as a Shakespeare professor thinking, oh, he has the right to kill her because, you know, mm-hmm. yeah, my readers didn't like that. So it was like 5-star, 1-star, 5-star, 1-1-1, 5-star.
Yep.
Yeah. I used to read Amazon. It was the very early days of Amazon and cry. My husband would go, oh. No more Amazon, no more. So
to so, the I mean, day, read Amazon. Yeah. I mean, they're still having to write incredibly detailed, like, author's notes at the end of books, trying to, like, explain away, like, 6 months difference of, like, when yeah. something was invented or something happened. I mean, I know truly nothing about much of history, so I'm just going in having a good time. But, yeah, I do think it would be hard, like, if you knew all that stuff to kind of separate. But, again, I mean, again, this Duke has all his teeth and hygiene and, you know, is hot. So
yeah, he's yeah. like young, hot, marriageable.
Yeah.
We'll throw it yeah. away for this.
Yeah. I don't know. So, I sort of, I'm moving away from the historical note. Mm-hmm. I mean, just, and so if you just look at the last 10 years, then a lot of things have changed in terms of consent, but they've yeah. also changed in terms of how people read romance. So they used to yeah. really read historical romance and they wanted historical fact, right? Now, I feel like where historical romance is at the moment, we do want to be in the past, right?
Yeah.
It's so refreshing not to be reading about, you know, COVID.
Student loans.
Yeah.
Trump, Biden, or whatever. It doesn't even matter how to talk about global warming. That is not a cheery subject for romance. So it's great to be in the past. At the same time, you'll have noticed from the historical note in Viscount, I made it much more personal. I feel like mm-hmm. romance writers now, you're able to just say, hey, this is my book. Here's yeah. where I took the, here's what I was thinking of. Here's where I took, you know, here's where I was referring to, you know, my mom or my dad or my child or my, or whatever, whatever, because it used to be that the book was almost like something that was supposed to exist apart from you. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And you defeated the reader somehow if you, you know, didn't have all the details right. I don't get that sense from readers at all anymore. I get much more of a personal sense. So just to give you an example, I mean, it's historical romance, right? It's not contemporary romance.
Yeah. The
history isn't wallpaper. But it comes out of normal life. So, like, I had a student last year who was diagnosed with dyslexia. Mm-hmm. You know, and I teach in college, right? I teach at Fordham University. And I was so shocked because I just thought he was a bad speller. And, you know, I was like, you're a bad speller. You spell check, right? Yeah. And then they were like, oh, no, he's dyslexic. And I started thinking how hard it would have been. Right, in 1804, if you're dyslexic, everyone would simply think you're stupid. So I think something like that is really fascinating core for a historical romance now, because mm-hmm. it echoes what's happening now. Why do we say somebody is, you know, why do we denigrate people? Why do we look down on people? It's often something that we don't totally understand, often a physical condition that we don't understand, or, mm-hmm. you know, an inbred, you know, race prejudice that we have or something. You see what I mean? So I could use that as a way of being in the past, but in the present.
Well, and that's why I think I really loved this book, because there was like a drastic like change from start to finish, especially for Dom, in like how he understood Tori and her dyslexia. I mean, like, I feel like a lot of books nowadays don't necessarily change. They're pretty static, I feel like, a lot of characters. But this one was just so fun to read, because I was like, do I like him? And then I was like, actually, I love him. But then I was like, kind of, I hate him. And like, it was like back and forth, which was, it was so fun, because like, I was just like Tori, like I was like feeling like her, being like, okay, he's really hot, but also he's kind of mean right now. But also he's really hot. So it was just so fun, because I felt that like he had work to do and he did it, which I just frequently I see sometimes the work not being done, mm-hmm. especially on page.
I mean, Hannah and I have had this conversation so many times of like, mm-hmm. I think because there are so many readers like who are just approaching romance in a different way, where they will immediately, if the characters are not good people right yeah. away. They will be like, I hated this, I DNF'd it one star. And that's so frustrating because I love a character who starts out not good mm-hmm. and then has that character arc. And I mean, you know, Dom is good in the sense that yes. he's moral and upstanding and he's doing his best, but like he has his issues and so does Tori. And so mm-hmm. I just, yeah, I also with Hannah was eating up that like character arc of, you know, he has work to do and he's going to have to
do it.
Really work on himself yeah. to get himself yeah. to a place where he like deserves Tori. I also, can I just like bring us back for our readers who haven't read this book yet? I would love to get just like your, I guess, elevator pitch. Yeah. Tell them a bit, like, what's the book about?
Okay. So the book is about a Viscount who's betrothed to the perfect young lady who speaks French and can do French plays and is so intellectual and so smart and so wonderful. And he inherits two deeply eccentric orphans who, for example, start making up a list of all the things you're not allowed to talk about in polite society, which, of course, they instantly are going to be talking about. And they're writing horrendous stories about a serial killer, which, by the way, I totally stole from my daughter at age 11. Those are her stories that are quoted there. And so his perfect fiance is like, I want nothing to do with this. And she elopes with someone else. Spit spot. And so he ends up blackmailing her father into allowing him to marry her younger sister.
Good right. for him.
Right. But Tori can't read because she's dyslexic. And they mm-hmm. did not understand that at the time. I had one of the most fascinating things I learned was that dyslexic people often can write in blue ink if they can't write in black ink, you know, so she can only sign the marriage papers in blue ink. Mm-hmm. So I learned a lot about dyslexia, but all of society thinks she's stupid. At the same time, all of society thinks she's a lady. The only thing she's allowed to paint, because she's a painter, because she can't read or write, is rabbits and bunnies and kittens and flowers, right? Yes. So I got mm-hmm. really interested in this, and I don't want to blow the end for you, but I will
yes,
say
this is a spoiler-free episode.
Spoiler-free episode. One of my favorite emotions when reading a romance is a sense of comeuppance. And when you guys are talking about it doesn't happen on the page, he doesn't get better, what's yeah. being denied to us, in my opinion, is comeuppance. Because if we think of ourselves as Tori, at the end we need a really big grovel that is yeah. based in like he learned something. He learned, yeah. he changed. And then there is a twist in that grovel at the end, which I also really liked. Because she too had things to learn. Everyone's got mm-hmm. stuff to learn. We all need to learn yes. to do better, you know, in mm-hmm. our own ways.
Oh, comeuppance.
Yeah, Hannah's nodding because that's her. I'm more forgiving. Hannah is like, if the villain or whoever doesn't get their comeuppance, oh, she's yeah. mad.
Yeah. So no, I love that. And I just, all the little things that he did throughout the book. Oh, I'm just thinking about him. Yeah, I was just thinking, I'm a huge Teresa Medeiros fan. And so like reading her books set in like 1999 or like published in 1999. I think she yeah. has like a Breath of Magic. I don't know if you've read.
Yeah. No, Carrie's one of my close friends. I've read them all.
Good.
Okay. Well, we love her too.
So good. With the Puritan witch and the 90s billionaire, I thought that was the funniest thing. But whenever I pitch that book to people, I have to be like, here is like an article, maybe why like it could be problematic and all of that. Like I have to kind of like set it up. And so I guess just like when you go about writing a book today, do you think about, you know, readers' reactions in that regard? Or is it more so just like natural as you've changed with the times and stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of lucky because I teach, mm-hmm. you know, I teach 19, 20, 21 year olds. Like I hear what they think about Romeo and Juliet yeah. every freaking day, right? And I teach a lot of Shakespeare and pop culture. So we do not just, you know, Romeo and Juliet, but we do all the movies and then we do advertisements and then we do rewriting. So I hear a lot about, you know, about sex. I also read a huge amount of romance. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't read historical romance because I have a leaky voice and I don't want to pick anyone else's mm-hmm. up, but I read a ton of contemporary romance. Mm-hmm. I mean, at the moment, like I'm obsessed by Allie Hazelwood. Mm-hmm. I'm just obsessed. Like I just got the new book and I'm letting myself only read little bits, right?
Yep,
like,
yep.
After chapter, a chapter. Yeah, you know, but lots of people. And I think I learn a tremendous amount from that. I mean, anytime someone comes up to me and they're like, I really want to read romance and write romance. you know, and I say, what are you reading? And they're like, well, Jane Austen. Or they say, oh, well, I don't really read it too much. I think, it's not going to work.
No. You can tell. As a reader, you can definitely tell. Just in my life, I am a nobody in the romance. But, like, they're like, are you going to write a romance? I'm like, I haven't read enough. And they're like, you read so much. I'm like, yeah, but there is so much.
There's so much romance. Yeah, I can't read it all.
I have not nearly read enough to be able to do what I would ever want to do. And again, you don't need to, like, be great to do what you love or what you would want to do. But I just think that, obviously, the best writers are readers. And it's just, it's very clear when an author enjoys what they're writing and knows the genre.
And it's clear when they don't know the genre.
Yeah.
Or at least a little
bit.
TV
producers don't know the genre, or show producers, things like that.
I don't know. I would say if you want to write, just write. I mean, do what I did. Like, I had never heard of point of view. Mm. I never took a creative writing class, right? I was taking like Shakespeare classes. So when my first reviews came in, they were all like, she's head hopping. She doesn't understand POV. I remember sitting there going, what is POV? What are they talking about? I have no idea what they're talking about. But the thing is, I was head hopping. Everyone had a point of view. You know, Butler would enter in Potent Pleasures. He had a point of view for a paragraph and then someone else had it. But it didn't matter. That book sold and it came out in hardcover because it doesn't matter. If you're reading lots of romance and you're loving them and it's giving you an idea for characters that you would love to put on the page, just freaking do it. I mean, my biggest piece of advice is that I write utter crap in the first. I mean, sometimes I think if I die now and somebody thinks they're going to take this, would be so humiliating if this was my last book. And I shall go to my husband, Alessandro, and I'm like, don't ever let anyone into my laptop. It's like, you're not going to die. But I mean, I had that sense with every single book.
Yeah.
I used to say, Lisa Clayton, I was like, Lisa, getting to the end of this book, if something happens, you have to finish it for me because she's such a beautiful writer. But now I'm more like, okay, you know, whatever. I'll probably survive to the end of the book.
It's so funny.
Talking about POV, though.
The point about head hopping is so funny to me because I love head hopping, but it feels like
it's a lost art.
The like more contemporary writers who like started newer stay away from it. And it feels like a little bit more of a like kind of old school, like older historical romance thing. Yeah. And very few people do it and do it well now. And this is a book where I was eating it up. I love the head hopping.
Great.
But that's so interesting that people immediately were like, oh, she doesn't understand POV, as if that hadn't been like an established thing. Like, you were not the first person to do that.
Well, but I didn't understand POV. Well, they're actually right. I had no idea what they were talking about. I mean, I really didn't. Yeah. Now I know things like, okay, you know, if you're switching in a scene, the person who has the biggest emotion should be the one whose head you're in, right? Mm-hmm. Or if you're talking about comeuppance, you want to be in his head at the moment when she's making mistakes because that's so delicious for the reader. Like, I love watching them make mistakes. Mm-hmm. Or you want to be in the heroine's head when he's making mistakes because you want her indignation and her rage and her like, oh, he's such a, you know, whatever. So you're dividing where you want to be, but it's just it's so much fun to figure out where you want to be in a chapter. I do find that I go, you know, I maybe switch point of view once in a chapter now. I don't do every paragraph because readers are much less able to follow now. I think we read faster. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Read faster. And also there's much more of a wish for a very intense hero and heroine. Mm-hmm. I always used to have a second romance going on. And I often had girlfriends with a point of view. I mean, I was, early in my career, it was like, okay, Eloisa writes girlfriends. That's very hard to manage now because I just don't have enough space. Mm-hmm. So Clara got one chapter in Viscount in Love because I love Clara and her reticules.
Yes. They were so vivid in my head. I know, I mean, Hannah can't visualize that way, but those reticules. Oh, they're in my brain.
Just to explain for readers, Clara is Tori's best friend, and she makes reticules, which are little bags in the shape of animal faces. So like a little mouse or a cat with proper wire whiskers that stick out the side. And spoiler alert, if she needs to, she could stick somebody with those whiskers.
It's fabulous. One of my favorite books of yours is How to Be a Wallflower. But I could not, like, I was like, I need like a fashion book to go along with this thing. Cause like, I just could not picture anything. I'm so bad at it cause I just can't. And so I'm like, I just need someone to draw all these beautiful outfits up and I need to see all these crazy colors. And I was like, I just need it.
Well, are the reticules, are those, like, based on any, like, historical things that you've seen? Or was that, like, a brainchild, you're just a genius? Okay. You're just a genius. I love it.
I'm a genius. Clara came to life, right? Mm-hmm. So Clara is the heroine of my next book. And, I mean, I got to say, I love Clara. Yes. I absolutely love her. So I think, you know, one of the wonderful things that's happening in romance now is there's so much more breadth of space for heroines. They don't all have to be super clever all the time and super aggressive and super feminist. You know, we can have all different kinds of people. And Clara is not like, you know, she's not sparky, super witty. She likes making her reticules. And she's best friends with Tori because they're both kind of written off as losers. You know, Clara's plump and she likes making cat face bags. You know, you see exactly where she is. Mm-hmm. Like, I know lots of people like that. She's a wonderful person.
Yeah. So. I feel like I love seeing the differentiation in heroines throughout books and authors and stuff. Because, you know, there's like the blue stocking or the wallflower. Like, that's like the two. But there's so much in between that. And I do love a very either like quiet heroine, but not necessarily a wallflower or one who really does want a family. And that's not a bad thing. Because it's really a dichotomy of like they either don't want to go by society's conventions or they're like very prim and proper, but they still maybe don't. So I think it's very fun to experiment with different character types. So is there like a favorite one that you have for either like a hero or heroine, or are you just like, does it take like the creatively just like take you whenever you start a book, or you know like what you want
to? No, you have to develop, you have to develop them as people, right? Mm-hmm. So you do a lot of waking up in the middle of the night and having conversations with them that will never go on paper, ever.
Yeah.
And then over months, they develop into somebody. I think I write sort of witty, educated women very well. So like the Desperate Duchess series, you know, they're playing high-level chess that, you know, not that you have to know anything about chess.
Right.
But I, again, little historical fact. A chess game was the only time when a man and woman could be alone together in a room without a chaperone because it was considered an intellectual exercise. They actually, in the Middle Ages, used to play chess in the ladies' bedchamber.
Huh.
And you know, you can't tell me lots of stuff wasn't going on during that supposed chess
game. Well, no, because I remember very the series sexy. And the chess in that series. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it was sex. You know, chess became the symbolism of sex, right? Mm-hmm. It was the metaphor for sex. But, I mean, people like that. People like Esme in the Duchess in Love series. I mean, people really loved her. I write women who I want to be friends with, right?
Mm-hmm.
But now I feel like I have more freedom to write. I think that readers will love reading about Clara, you know? Like, I read romances now about all kinds of people. My next hero, I think, is going to be, which I've done before, but, you know, sort of a little bit divergent and intellectually divergent, not straight out autism. But I mean, I've done that before, but only in a minor key, right? But now, you know, you could really write it. And that's something I have in my family, so I can really see it. I, you know, I know it. So it's fun.
Yeah, it's gotta really be. Yeah, so fun as an author to be able to just have that space nowadays to be able to do really what you want, as opposed to it would be just thinking about, because I mean, I was not reading historical romance, you know, 10, 20 years ago. So it is interesting to go back just in today's age and then see just from what I can like get from people's, you know, stories and stuff. But I mean, I'm just so happy that I found historical romance. And I mean, you were one of the first authors that I read. So this is a very surreal moment. When Beauty Tamed the Beast, I can't. Cracked. When I just think about that book sometimes and just laugh. so fun. Do you have a favorite trope to write? Or like,
do you have a favorite trope?
Beauty and the Beast, whatever.
Beauty and the Beast. I mean, I like Beauty and the Beast. Yeah. I really like Cinderella. I really like forced marriage. I mean, nowadays, Grumpy Sunshine is so much fun. And of course, that is a pervasive thing in the Viscount. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right? You know, so, but there's so many great tropes. Like Clara, when you get to Clara, it's naked Laird in the stream. Which is a trope all the time, right?
Yes.
I love that.
Yeah, it's like Scotland distilled down to what you most want to see.
I want a naked Laird in the stream.
Scotland.
Yeah.
Naked Laird in the stream. He's fishing, by the way. He does have a reason for being in the stream.
He doesn't.
But why would
one.
You get your pleats out on your quilt if you didn't have to?
Oh my gosh.
It's fun.
Oh.
Well, I've got a question for you guys because you're reading all kinds of stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are you reading any what I would call gothic adjacent books? You know, sort of gothic romance, but maybe historical romance with a gothic twist?
I mean, we have.
I'm thinking of writing.
We have Gaywick.
Yeah, Gaywick.
Which was really good. Vincent Vierga's Gaywick. Was it like 1980 or something?
Yeah, it was really early.
I've read. Erica Ridley has a gothic historical romance series that I've read a few in. I'm really big into like historical paranormal. Like, I love that. So I feel like some of those kind of just inherently lean gothic. But I don't just really know where to find.
Yeah,
I guess,
I think that's kind of a blind spot. Gothic. I mean, the Teresa Medeiros, the vampire ones are some of our favorite books.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
I think lean very gothic.
Are they really? Mm-hmm. I'm going to tell her that. Those books failed.
That hurts my feelings so badly.
Sometimes. As a reader now, I hate readers back then who let like Cressley Cole's like historical romance series like go unfinished.
Yeah.
I believe Teresa has an. I'm like, I just can't.
Midnight? Is that the first one? The blue one?
Yeah.
I think that was my first of her books, and I was like, give me more
read it
right
for
now.
Book club.
Inject it into my veins.
Every book I read by her, I'm just like, I can't.
I'm totally gonna tell her that she's gonna love it.
Good.
She had this great idea. It was so original. It was so different.
Yeah.
And then readers just didn't want to combine vampires and Regency, even though, you know, she's arguably one of the most creative writers, right?
Those readers are our personal nemesis now.
Well, what was that book? It was Anne Mallory, For the Earl's Pleasure, I believe. And I do understand where people were confused because nowhere in the summary said that man was a ghost. But personally, I would love to start a book and not know that the hero is going to be a ghost in like 15 pages. Looking back at all the reviews, because Anne Mallory is one of my new like favorite obsessions because of that book. And all the reviews are like, I can't believe this is a paranormal book. They're so angry. And meanwhile, I'm just so happy that man was turned into a ghost and only she can see him. And like, it was so fun. And so it just, the whole paranormal historical intersection is incredibly fun to me. Like, whenever I go to a used bookstore, I automatically, like, try to find those because they're so hard to find, like, online. You can't really Google. Like, you get the few historical, like, the bigger ones. But there are so many that, like, just don't get any keyword searches in Google.
Right.
And so I'm, like, in the archives, I feel like, looking for those.
Catherine Kingsley. Have you ever read anything by her?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Catherine Kingsley. She was out there original, and she wrote one where the hero is literally Jesus.
Oh.
And it is he can do miracles, right?
Oh,
yeah. She was very famous, I think, for going to like romance conferences with a parrot on her shoulder. Anyway, you might really like hers. I thought she was great. I thought she was so original. I haven't read one in a long time, so forgive me if they're offensive in any way. But
no, I love that. I would love to come back to the gothic adjacent and see what your recommendations for that are, because that is a space that I am interested in, but just have not like really found. Yeah. I think.
And I haven't found it. I mean, so here's my idea, okay? So if you look at the gothic, you know, the genre of gothic, right? There's always, it's really from the female point of view, often in the first person. She can't trust her own senses. She's in danger, like in some house, and she's isolated and she doesn't know who to trust. Mm-hmm. So did you guys read The Bride?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Allie Hazelwood's The Bride.
I haven't read it yet.
I was thinking Joanna Lindsay's The Bride. No, I haven't, but I've seen like a lot, I feel like, about it.
It's basically a gothic, okay, right? The heroine's a vampire. She has to go live with a werewolf. She doesn't know who to trust. A hero's the only one she can trust. And, you know, and I have to say she's very witty. So it's a lot of fun. And I was reading that and thinking I would really love to do that. The thing is, I'm not sure I want to go to first person. That's why I'm kind of asking everyone if they know anything about the adjacent. Because I'm thinking I might make up my own genre. Like, I would like to have my heroine's a two-book series that I'm pitching right now, right? So I'm chesting it out on you guys. So
we're on board already. So.
Isolated.
Yeah.
Right? Totally isolated in Scotland, because why not? Right. Isolated, unable to trust people. The hero is there. One of them is this neurodivergent guy. But I don't want to have real ghosts, I think. Mm. And I want her to make fun of it.
Mm.
So would that destroy the whole gothic thing? In other words, you have to be really scared to be enough of a gothic, or would it just be fun to be almost gothic?
I don't think you do. I think you get that intertextual, like playing with the gothic genre, even if it doesn't technically, like it's not fully gothic, but you're in conversation with. I mean, I would love that. Yeah. I love a little like poking fun at genre conventions. Yeah. Feel like I've read, so not that, but something that does like kind of what you're talking about, like poking fun at the gothic conventions.
Well, because there's a
literally the only thing I know of is Jane Austen's Northanger.
Well,
Abbey.
I love Northanger Abbey, so
I do too. So I just reread it and I was like, yes, this is fabulous.
I would eat up a Northanger Abbey vibes inspired historical romance. I'm on board.
So you guys are mainly reading historical romance?
It's
your greatest love?
It is our greatest love. It's what we talk about here the most.
Yeah.
But it's not the only thing we're reading.
I started reading YA romance, you know, long time ago. So I read that and I didn't know adult romance existed. Literally had no clue. I don't know what I was doing. And then I think my mom had Beach Read by Emily Henry on Libby. And then she's like, oh, I think you'd like that. So then I read that. And then I read a few. E.B. Dunmore, Bringing Down the Duke was the first historical romance I'd ever come in contact with. And that was great. But I had no clue what to do with that. Where else to go after that, besides just waiting for her next book. Because I was not online. Like, I didn't know. I didn't have a community to, like, tell me, like, read this, read that. But it was really, like, the Bookstagram. And then I completely took off with historical romance.
That's wonderful. I love hearing that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I want my genre to continue.
Well, so do we. We just want to scream that you don't like, because I feel like you were talking earlier about, you know, you used to be very historically like accurate and like conscious and stuff. And you've kind of went away from that. Whereas I think people who don't read the genre still think that it's just a very stuffy, like, and I'm like, oh, you could, nothing is like, there's just no stuffiness in my opinion. Like, it's just so, and the stuffiness that is there is meant to be there because it's fun and dramatic, but it's like a Duke who's stuffy or like a Viscount, but not.
And they always have to be unstuffed.
Yeah.
If they're a main character.
Like,
I hear you. I mean, I think it might be a cover problem too. I was just talking to someone about this. I mean, I think we just need a really new cover, you know, like not a girl in a dress and not a guy naked in a stream, although that, you know, has its own pleasures, but and probably not an illustrated like Evie Dunmore, because that feels like that kind of got played out.
Well, it's hard because it's like, I, you know, think about this and you're just like, okay, so they don't want the illustrated cover with, you know, more traditional like Victorian, you know, notes, but they also don't want naked people, but they also don't want this, they also, we can't have step backs because they're too expensive, we can't do this, and I'm like, what is left?
People collect books now because they're pretty, you know, with the pictures on the edges and so on. My books are probably going to go to trade paperback size, which is the larger size. So I'm kind of thinking it just needs to be something you want to pick up because it's so pretty. rather than the people being pretty.
Mm.
The book is pretty. I just don't know how to visualize that.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm not sure if you know this. I work for Forever in the marketing and publicity department. Oh, and so, some people do. And then I forget to mention it because I just assume that everyone knows this about me. And then I'm like, Eloisa James does not know this. I work for Forever, and a lot of what we publish is romance. And so I don't work on a ton of the historical romances, but I do here and there. And it's so interesting to see trying to balance exactly that. Like, there are the readers who will not pick up a Clinch cover.
Mm-hmm.
But then there are so many loyal historical romance readers who will buy it, who will only pick up a classic Clinch cover. And it's like, I don't know how to make everybody happy here, except to just
get new readers.
Yeah. Like bringing in the new readers, but not leaving behind the people that really like the tradition. It's just so,
I don't think you can.
Yeah. I don't have an answer.
Mass market is dying as a form, right? You go into Barnes & Noble, into the romance thing. There's only this many mass markets, and it's all dependent on Walmart. Yeah. So that's not going to survive. And I've never really seen Clinch covers on a trade paperback size, which for people who are not, is just the larger one. Mm-hmm. I think my publishers are thinking that if if you're a historical reader, you probably know Eloisa, you either buy Eloisa or you don't, right? Mm-hmm. And people often say, I read you a lot. I learned about sex from you. Then I had 10 years off. Now I'm back. I'm like, hello, I'm back.
I never left.
The key thing is not those people who know that. It's people like you who are picking it up for the first time. What makes you pick it up, right? Mm-hmm. What made you pick up Evie Dunmore? Because that's the audience.
She knew me better than I knew myself. She gave it to me. But no, I do agree, because I think, I mean, even with those covers, I don't think I would have picked that up myself.
No.
I
don't think they're pretty enough. So they're sort of kind of old-fashioned looking.
I guess I had no real compunction about picking up a Clinch cover or anything when I was first starting. But I get I can see, I guess, where readers don't want that, because I mean that is also happening obviously in contemporary too, looking at the covers and even just rejacketing certain books and everything, but I am also just, I'm guilty of it too, because I had just read that Mary Baylog book, Caroline, A Matter of Class, and Hachette was republishing it, and I told her, I was like, I don't think I would have picked this up if you hadn't mentioned that you guys were doing this, just because the cover did not speak to me in either of the formats. And it was so good. I read it twice. I finished it.
It was great.
And then started again. I was like, I can't. It was so good. Sweet. But again, I don't think I would have picked that up without having a reason to. And that makes me sad.
Yeah, I'm going to look at it. A Matter of Class. Let me see. Mm-hmm. What kind of new cover did they give her? An illustrated one?
No, more of the Bridgerton.
Yeah, is the head cut off? I can't remember.
The head's not completely cut off, I don't think. But it's the blocky text.
And that's probably,
this was the old cover. So that's the old cover.
This one is, it's kind of blurry, little.
Yeah.
And then a woman off in the distance. I don't know. Mm-hmm.
And then the new one is, her head is cut off. So it's like that.
Oh, yeah.
So it's giving Bridgerton to me.
The new Bridgerton covers.
Yep.
That wasn't Forever. So I didn't. Mm-hmm. It was Hachette books, a different imprint. But that was so interesting. And I think it's because of the Walmart. Walmart really wants the Bridgerton style, because those sold so well when the show first started. And I'm like, but that, I don't like that. I don't like that cover style.
We haven't had a lot of bumps from Bridgerton. I've had a big bump in sales in the UK from Bridgerton, but not here.
Interesting.
Really?
I don't think there's a Bridgerton halo here.
And that's why we have this podcast. We just want to scream that historical romance is so fun and crazy. And there are ghosts and vampires and all these things that can happen. And so it's just so hard as someone who loves it. And obviously for you, someone who writes it and loves it, to just see people write it off
Have you seen, since you've started writing, because I feel like this is one of those cycles, and I wonder if, like, have you seen a decline in historical before like this?
There has been, I mean, I've seen them all decline. I remember being in New York for a conference, and there was a whole line of editors, and they were like, just don't give me anything paranormal. I can't sell it. There's not a single reader. And I was sitting there thinking, but Buffy is really huge on TV. I don't know. And sure enough, then J.R. Ward wrote her first vampires, and then there was not, you couldn't buy anything but paranormal. So I'm really curious to see what happens, because it's like Bridgerton came in like this vector, right? And I did, I mean, my last book sold 25% more in ebook than the one before. So there's, you know, there's definitely like more people reading in e and reading historical, I think. But the question is whether we can come up with, I mean, you know, I really deliberately tried to write Viscount and Love in a different way. And I tried even more with the next book. And I think either historical suits itself to the to what people want to read now, which is not an information dump. They do not want to hear about the rippled blue glass on the, you know, wall or whatever. It's got to, either we do that or we don't. And so we're in a moment where I could see it either flourishing or dying. I just don't know.
I mean, you talk about like the rippled blue glass, but then it's like they're reading fantasy up the wazoo that just gives you endless amounts of description. That's why I can't do it, is because that's just so much, and the books are so long, and I just can't picture what they're putting down. So I'm just like, you're throwing all this stuff at me. And so it's like, we've had the conversation, Caroline and I, about how historical romance is closer to fantasy than, you know, contemporary. And so I think people do try to be like, you know, if you like fantasy, try historical, which I do think that's not like a one-to-one match. Like, there are very, very different things. But yeah, I feel so powerless, but also like, you want to do something because it's just such a fun thing.
You are doing
it'd be so sad to not have like new books come out. Like, I'd get like panicked about like, well, okay, what if like these are the only books ever? like if it dies, and then like the ones like the backlist is like all you have. I mean, like, Jennifer McQuiston is one of my like favorite authors, but she has what, like, 6 books. And so it's just so like, I don't know, scary to like think of it like that.
Jennifer's the one who, I mean, she's with the CDC, right?
Yeah.
I mean, she got bound up. She was doing Ticks, and then, you know, COVID came along, so she might can make her way back to writing at some
point.
Good
for her, because I think I heard that in Fate of Maeve. Yeah, well, because her first one was What Happens in Scotland, and that was a hilarious book that I just love so much. And then I read all of her books after that, and I was just like, I can't believe there's only like 6 or however many, maybe 9. And so I'm very, and now I have to pace myself with authors like Anne Mallory. I'm trying to like wait and like just read a few, because there's not like a huge backlist. But yeah.
There's a lot of really great people, though, who aren't publishing anymore. I mean, Karen Medeiros is one of them. Connie Brockway has really great books.
I have a lot by Connie Brockway.
Catherine Kingsley has crazy books. Did you read Flowers in the Storm?
Oh, you did, yeah.
I'm a big Laura Kinsale fan.
I know. Laura's books are insane and mostly wonderful. You know, there's just a lot of really fabulous people back there to read. And then young people coming up now. I mean, that's my, I'm just kind of sorry that the RWA used to be a place where you could go and you're really, you know, teaching classes and nurturing, and people get excited about whatever you were teaching. And that just doesn't quite exist anymore. So that's unfortunate. I think it makes it harder for new readers, new writers.
Yeah.
Because when my first book came out, then I joined the RWA, right?
Gotcha.
And I found all these people who helped me like understand what POV was, which is good. It was very helpful.
Yeah.
I guess going back to what you were saying about Gothic, so I think Erica Ridley has a Gothic series. I don't think it was first person.
No, Erica doesn't write in first person. Yeah.
I have noticed with YA historical becoming a little bit more popular, that's where you get the first person, because YA is just more first person bent. And then J.J. McAvoy, who wrote Aphrodite and the Duke, and Hather and the Prince, which is a fabulous book, she's also first person. And that's very mm-hmm. fascinating, because that to me reads a little bit more like a new adult historical romance. Like, they're fully adults, but it yeah. has that kind of like YA, like young right. love yeah. feel, which is very fascinating. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really has to do with the first person and like what you're yeah. getting, because so much, most of the rest of historical is third. And so I guess have a preference. I mean, I like third just because that's what everything is. But I do know a lot of people who only like first. So I think that could also be a thing where they don't want to read historical, because there's not.
I don't know. I really relish having the hero's point of view.
Yeah. See, so. I love it in historical. In contemporary, I'm a single POV. I like both, but in mm-hmm. contemporary, I just don't know if I really want to dabble with a contemporary man's mind as much as in historical. Because I feel like that just they're more interesting. Here
is tricky, really tricky.
Yeah,
I mean, I was teaching genre fiction last year, and I gave them, you know, a different romance or a different genre fiction every year, and I gave them one which I thought was great. It was, you know, a neurodivergent heroine, and the hero was like, he met her by bringing a casserole to the door. And he was a real, that's something is, you know, that I see now in contemporary romance that just did not happen before, which is sort of the beta hero, to be mm-hmm. to be blunt about it. And they were like, the idea that she would open the door and eat something that a strange man gave to her is, and I never even occurred to me. I was like, whoa, but it's the hero. And you're inside his head, you know he's good. And we were like, forget it.
There's
forget
only it. Love in this casserole. There's no poison.
You know what, though? I would have eaten the casserole.
I would not have thought, what is this strange casserole doing? I would have simply eaten.
Maybe we're...
Well, if I was in his point of view and you knew he was a good guy, a nice little beta guy who makes casseroles, I didn't think about it. But yeah, that... I mean, the thing is, we were talking in the beginning about, you know, like 20 years of romance. Alpha heroes have yeah. changed a lot, right? So you now become the protective alpha. It's much harder if you're not in his point of view to establish mm-hmm. that he's a good alpha mm-hmm. at some point.
That's even with Dom. Again, I felt like he was a bit just more like interesting than heroes have been recently. Like, and I love a moment when a character is just going to, like you said, like blackmail, like do whatever they need to do to get the other person. Like, I'm all for it. I love it. Like Tom Severin, like he wants it, he got it. Like Harry Rutledge. Yes. And so I just think that's so fun. My favorite scene, which I don't think is a spoiler, but it's just great. And I think it would sell the book to any historical romance reader, is when she says she likes the actor's muscles. And so he just like strips.
Yeah, that's
he's so real for that. I love that so much. Like, I had to take a minute. I was like, this is the funniest thing I've ever read. But like, I liked that he was funny and, but also still a little bit of a jerk at times, where I was like, whoa. But it was so fun to like read that and like fall in love with him as Tori was as well. Because I think nowadays it's a lot of like the cinnamon rolls and the beta heroes, which I love a good virgin hero. I love a good cinnamon roll. But it's a hard balance, I feel like, to find, especially nowadays.
It is an interesting point about like you have to be in his head. I don't think I would have liked yeah. him if I wasn't no. in his head. I would be like, why are mm-hmm. you so rude and stuff? But because you're in it and he's like, no, I don't like her, but I will have her. She is mine. And I will duel anyone who looks at her. And you're like, you're so dumb. I love it. Like, he's not dumb. He's fighting in the House of Lords against, like, slavery. But, like, I love a man who's dumb in love. A Viscount in love, if you will.
Inside there you every are. Smurf.
So that's why I called it Viscount in love, though. Because yeah. the whole lovely thing is that he just never knows what he is.
No.
I love oblivious men.
Oh, there's inside no every good. Smart man is a dumb man. I mean, that's just what it is. So it's just, yeah. Oh, that book. I can't wait to reread it.
Oh, thank you. That is my absolute favorite, you know, thing that a fan can ever say to me is I reread it. It's like, oh my God, that's just such a lovely
book. I'm a huge rereader, especially in audio, because I read now a lot of ARCs. So then when I get the audiobooks, and then Susan Duerden is the narrator. I believe, oh, she's so good. Of a lot of your books is fantastic. And then is this one different? Yeah. Or is that? Is
this one is different. Yeah.
And I think
this was to a younger narrator.
Mm-hmm.
I think again, feeling like we really need to have younger voices also because, you know, the heroine's young.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And that makes sense. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We gotta go young. So, well,
we're coming.
Do you guys? Let me just ask you one more question.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you guys look at TikTok at all?
Do we what?
Are you TikTok people?
Oh, Caroline
at all?
Is a big.
I am.
TikToker.
I actually started. I got into romance because of TikTok, and then I got my job. Well, I got my internship because of TikTok. So that was my like initial platform. And now I'm on Instagram a lot, but that is that. That's where I have the most. The followers, I suppose. It's an interesting.
So do you,
yeah.
So you're doing book talk on TikTok?
I am. Well, right now I'm also very. This is. Listeners of the podcast will know I'm also very into Formula One, which is a semi recent obsession.
Oh, Netflix. I watched every single one. My husband's like, "What are you doing?" I'm like, "Get out of here." Netflix
drama.
I've even found myself like reading little snippets in the newspaper, just crazy.
I went out here reading like biographies.
I
and memoirs.
Am. I'm in the nonfiction.
Yeah. Oh wow, you really?
Well, so yeah. I was saying we were both traveling before this. I was with my friend. We went to England for the race.
We did.
Oh so God. That was we were at the British Grand Prix. Right.
Yeah.
So when I say I'm into Formula, I'm like, I'm in it. I'm watching the races. Yeah. But I am also She's posting about that now. So my whole TikTok is like books, but also race cars. But yes, right? I am in book talk. It's an interesting space.
I didn't know about Formula One until that show came out. And then my agent, Kim Witherspoon, who's, you know, she's got Inkwell Management, it's on Fifth Avenue. She's like, Mary, you have to, well, Eloisa, because my real name is Mary. She's like, you have to watch this show. You have to watch it. And I was very, it was so happy. I was so happy for like 2 weeks. Watch it every night.
Oh, it's so great.
Caroline made me watch it at Steamy Lit when we went last year, Steamy Lit Con. We were in the same hotel room and it was good because I'm not a big Formula One person, but I was like, I will watch this when it is on.
Yeah, I need you to watch the rest of it. I need you to catch up. That is how I got my friend is my coworker that went with me to the races. I got her through Drive to Survive. I was like, it's like hot, arrogant men who
historical romance.
They're so historical romance coded. They're like hot, rich athletes who drive cars really fast, and they're so dramatic, and it's nothing but interpersonal drama for no reason.
But it's so emotional. So that's what gets me. They can go and throw a race with their emotions. And I'm like, you've been exercising, you know, 400 hours a day on all these special machines and everything. And then you don't feel that good. You don't even have your periods. And what are you complaining about? Oh, my God. They smashed the race. Like, and that whole scandal this year, like, I can't wait to see what Netflix does with it. You know, with that guy, the evil, whatever his name
Christian
is.
Horner, that show. One.
Christian Horner. Oh, my God. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
If I was a reporter, I would totally be knocking on that woman's door. The former. Wouldn't you? Come on.
I mean, I would love to know what happened. Yeah, though, there's just so much drama this whole season. And it's so emotional. And right now, the, like, two guys that are fighting for the lead of the championship are also friends. So there's so much like, oh, are they still friends? And they're like fighting on track and they like ran into each other a couple races ago. And yeah, like the one guy like has finished his race. And then everybody's like, the friendship is over, but it's not. Oh my God. It's so dramatic for no reason. Yeah. I love it.
I actually read a stupid article about that. I mean, that's how obsessed I am. Like, oh, God. Well, you know, I don't think the New York Times ever covered that until this Formula One came up, Drive to Survive. And I tried the other ones, like the golf one. It's totally boring.
Yeah.
I couldn't do it. I managed to do part of the, you know, tennis one wasn't too bad.
I've heard the tennis one is the other decent one.
It's kind of fun. Yeah. There's tennis, and then there was one other one.
They did a NASCAR one, and I couldn't get past the first episode.
Which
NASCAR?
One?
I think because NASCAR is so, like, American. And I'm like, that's not as fun as these, like, mostly European, but also, you know, there's, like, a Mexican driver and Japanese and Chinese. Like, they're from all over, but it's largely a European sport, and they're so silly.
Not Home Depot sponsoring.
It's just
and they're so rich.
So rich.
I mean, it's like daddy's a trillionaire.
Yeah.
It was really interesting when Russia invaded the Ukraine, right?
Oh my gosh.
I love that. And suddenly the Russian billionaire and his son got kicked off the Formula One
I was track. Just reading, I read Gunther. I read his book. Yeah. And he,
oh, do you do?
Yeah,
oh,
and wow. He like documented that whole year. He was doing like diary entries, basically, is the way this book goes. And oh, he was, wow. It was like okay. When Russia invaded Ukraine. And so you go through like his process of having to like, nice. What are you going to do about your title sponsor being a Russian oligarch yeah. And your driver is, yeah. It was rough. I did not envy being in his shoes.
Fascinating.
No, I want the vibes of Formula One. In a historical romance. Because there's Formula One contemporary like that, romance that yeah. Exists and it's great. It's a good time. I want it. What's the historical equivalent to that?
The closest, this is not close at all, but the closest I've got was Lenora Bell's, another fantastic author, The yeah. Duke That I Want or something. It's her Grease one. Okay. She just, it's like her most recent yes. Grease historical romance. And mm-hmm. So like they had to, like she had to figure out like a way to get like the T-Birds. In like historic, like you know, they have like all these cars in historical. So there was like carriage racing and stuff. So I feel like or curricle racing. Like I feel like you could. Like I feel like there's definitely a way you could do it. If she could do Grease, I feel like you can do F1. It was just very
you
fun.
Could. It's hard yeah. Though because in a historical romance you have so much to do.
Yeah.
But you, it. I mean, I'm sure Lenora, I can't read Lenora because she's got such a great mm-hmm. voice that I'll just start yeah. adopting. I think she's fabulous. But I, you have so much to do. Mm-hmm. It'd be hard to set up the whole idea of, you know, curricles. And then you'd have to set up, because that's what we call in academia, a homosocial society, right? Where the bonds between men matter way mm-hmm. more than the bonds yeah. between women. Yeah. And that's one of the things about Formula One. It's like watching a homoerotic, you know, thing yeah. just playing out right there, like the older guys mm-hmm. and the younger guys yeah. and the big cars and big penis envy everywhere. And
I think the way you'd probably have to do it is if the heroine wanted to get into like the racing, and then she'd have to like
she's trying to break into curricle. That's a whole thing yeah. now. That requires
that is, and you're just yeah. writing that you know
battle.
You're way out there on a feminist lane, yeah. basically. Kind of Sarah McLean could do
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that's true. Sarah, paging Sarah.
You can bomb someone or you can break into a curricle.
Yeah, well, if anybody listening wants to write me a historical romance with the vibes of Formula One, I'll read it. We're coming to the end of our time, so I would love to bring us back to Viscount in Love. Mm-hmm. I feel like, okay. Let's maybe, what was your favorite scene to write? Do you have a favorite scene?
Well, I have to say, I did love the scene in which he's desperate to get her, to make her marry him. And so, yeah, he's like, well, she liked that actor. So, and I'm bigger than that actor. So I'm just going to take my shirt off. And she had described the actor sitting in a chair. So he like just yeah. sits in the chair yeah. and he's like, so what do you think? And that was a great moment. I have to say, though, I also really loved a moment later in the book, so I'm trying to explain this without breaking it, when he thinks he's going to do something so great for her because he's going to be such a great mm-hmm. you know, husband. He's just going to be so generous and fabulous, and he doesn't understand the situation at all. And I loved writing that scene. Yeah. So one thing for those of you who are Bridgerton people and you watched Queen Charlotte, George is the one who started the Royal Academy of Art. Mm. George who goes mad, right? He's the one who started the Royal Academy of Art and was its greatest patron, and spoiler alert, had two women among the founding members because he was not sexist. I mean, for the time he really wasn't.
Interesting. And yet there'll still be readers, this was not historically accurate.
Yeah, I had to put a historical note about that.
Yep.
You know, there's this thing that the Royal Academy does where every summer they have, it's the oldest one in Europe. It's a contest. Anyone could enter. If you guys are artists, you could mm-hmm. enter. And one of my friends just got a piece admitted to it.
Wow.
So it's so cool. It's still going on. It's kind of like the Formula One of art.
That's how I'm going to pitch everything from now on. It's kind of like the Formula One of insert topic Blank. Here.
Yeah. You guys watched Queen Charlotte, right?
I watched part of it, but I knew how it was going to end, and I'm a
crying.
You have to watch it. You have to. It is such a perfect romance.
But you know how it ends, and it's I can't do it.
But he comes back to himself sometimes. So there's this incredible. Okay. Did you watch it, Hannah?
No, I have a thing where I don't engage with sad movies and TV shows. Yeah.
I know. I didn't want to either. However,
okay.
Number one, those actors are so unbelievably sexy.
That's so true. They are.
The guy is beyond gorgeous, yes. Right? And she is fabulous, and they have amazing chemistry. I mean, Bridgerton would cry to have this chemistry, right? Mm-hmm. And it is so romantic. And they don't go to the, you know, to the end or anything. It's very, very, very romantic. It's like a marriage the way we all wish we had a marriage, you know? Aww. So, I mean, you are going to cry.
Yeah.
But just because it's so sweet.
Yeah.
So I totally recommend it.
I watched about half of it, I think. And then I struggle with TV shows. I don't watch very many of them because I'll get distracted halfway through. But I'll
they're so long, even if they're short.
Yeah. I am. I did just watch My Lady Jane, which I didn't read the book. I didn't know anything about the book.
That book was great.
But I watched the show because they got me with the enemies to lovers banter of it all. And
they didn't get you with abortion.
I mean, I didn't watch that one because she gets her head chopped off.
It's ahistorical. It's also fantasy. People are shifting into animals. And it's also
he's a horse.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And they're very there's a narrator that's very much like, this is not history. So it is a happy ending.
Okay. Okay, I'll give it a shot. I mean, I was like, well, Jane, forget
yeah,
it.
I'm not yeah, yeah, yeah. No. It's not no, the actual it, history. And it's so...
Yeah, I read...
It's another it's one like that a, I'm like, a YA book. You should read historical romance if you like this. It's so historical. They like...
Well, that's... Yeah.
She like she thinks she's marrying one brother and like an arranged marriage, and then it's the other brother, and then the other brother has a secret.
Well, I've written that. Yeah.
Oh yeah, you have written and I ate that book up.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, if you like My Lady Jane, read My American Duchess.
I read that book back in 2018 or 2019 before I did any of this. Like, I think I just found it on Libby when I was still in grad school, and I had no clue what it was. It was just available. And yeah, within the first like few pages, he's shifting into a horse like during the day. And you're like, what is going on? And it was so good. So I'm very excited to watch that show. But yeah, I'm bad at TV shows and watching them and all of that.
Yeah.
Because I always have an audiobook or like a book I'm reading. So I'm like, I'd prefer just to do that. But I'm very excited for that one because that was a good book.
So would recommend.
Great audiobook. Too.
And if you're listening and you liked the show, My American Duchess.
Right. So let me give a plug for my TikTok.
Okay. Yes.
Because I am shifting my TikTok to mostly funny videos,
love,
which are being made by members of my family. And my son is great at it. So there's hysterical ones. There's a hysterical Bridgerton one that is Viscount in Love, where he warped the face of the Bridgerton hero and then warped the face of my Viscount. So that is my turn from like aesthetic videos. Now they're all going to be kind of funny.
Oh,
so please watch them.
We will have it linked in the show notes.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes, but also, is your username?
Eloise James.
Okay, great. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The one that is viral there is because Taylor Swift and Angie used my dad's, mentioned
Black.
My dad and used one of his poems in for the title. So, yeah.
I saw that. That was really cool. Yes, I really enjoy your reel. I'm more on Instagram, so I see your reels and stuff about talking about your backlist titles and, like, tropes that you've done. Because I feel like a lot of authors don't either have as extensive of a backlist or talk about them as much. So I like how you kind of, like, bring them back and talk about, like, virgin heroes and, like, things that you've done. So I really enjoy those and just, like, seeing – your opinion.
It's good to know. Thank you.
I'll keep doing
it. I never know what people are enjoying. So,
well, it's always fun to see authors talk about books that you loved and like read like a while ago, and then you always kind of think about them, but maybe you don't talk about them a lot just because like other things are coming out, and then seeing them love the things that you love still. Like it's really nice to see authors love books that you like, their books that you love, because obviously it's like, I feel like in the publishing industry is very fast. You move on very quickly to the next book. You know, one's coming out, you're already working on the next and all of that. So when you can give that backlist love, I do love to see it.
I will keep that in mind for sure. The moment is Viscount all the time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Well,
as
it is the moment right
as
now.
Be.
Viscount needs
it
his
is.
Moment.
We're 1 week away, so exciting.
Yes.
Let's hope.
Well, by the time people are listening, it will be on shelves. So go get it. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Buy it. Thank you, everyone. Please go get it.
You definitely should. And this is the start of a new series, yes.
It is, the Accidental Brides, yep.
So a perfect starting
place. Flower is an accidental bride.
Mm-hmm. And you already teased us a little bit.
The Laird in his dream.
Laird in his dream. That's the best teaser. I need no other information.
No. Literally, I have very specific Storygraph shelves where I categorize books because someone's going to ask for a very specific trope, and I'll have read it, but I won't remember it. So I categorize them, and I definitely have came upon the other naked or like saw the other naked, like in random situations like that. And that
you know what does that? My Lady Jane.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You see that man all the way from the back. It's amazing.
All the way from the back.
Yeah.
Okay.
Seeing the Laird in his dream
really,
all the way
now it's back. Just
well, I can't wait to see you guys see what you think of it, because there's a hysterical she draws some hysterical conclusions about seeing a man naked in a freezing stream.
Oh my god. Well, I also this book we get some very funny, like one of our favorite historical tropes is women using Greek statues as like sex education.
Yeah.
They're like, yeah, I know what a naked statues man looks lie. Like. And the scene where he draws her a picture took me out.
Well, I mean, that's another thing that's new in historical romance. You didn't used to be able to make fun of sex. You can now. Mm-hmm. You can make fun of it and it'll still be sexy.
Yeah.
You know,
sexier,
you can be
honestly.
Messy, as it were, and you can still be sexy. I love that. So it's a lot of fun.
I can't wait to reread.
So good.
Get book two.
Start of a new series. So if you, for some reason, haven't been reading Eloisa's books, you can start with this one. And then you can read all the other ones.
Thank you so much, you guys. It was lovely talking to you.
Thank you so much for taking – because you're in Italy all summer, right?
Yeah. Oh,
thank you for logging on for us.
I know. I don't think I would have.
I'm sorry that I'm late. I count on my iPhone, and then I left it in the bathroom. So
you're good.
Didn't worry.
I'm like, if I were in Italy for the summer, I might not have logged on. So
I'm just logging on 5 minutes late to everybody, so it's fine.
You're in Italian time, European time.
Yes.
It doesn't matter.
I'm in Italian time. So anytime you want to talk about historical romance, I'm here. It was totally fun talking to you guys. So
our
Formula One.
Yeah, we're gonna be on Instagram Live.
Yes. I think that will have happened before this episode airs.
But I'll have it recorded. So if you guys want to go check that out, because I think we'll probably drop this on the Friday of Pub Week.
Yeah, if you send me a link, I'll put it on my Facebook group and all of the place.
Oh, yeah, I'm in your Facebook group. Yeah. We'll be on Instagram Live. Watch that recording, as this will be probably after that, talking about the new release, because that'll be on release day, which is July 23rd. So is that I'm a Cancer baby. Is that into Leo territory, I feel like?
I don't know.
it gives Leo.
Wrong audience. We're like,
I don't know.
I'm very partial to things in July. So, because my birthday, it's next week, so I love July things.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Happy birthday to you and Viscount.
And Viscount, exactly.
It's
exactly.
All coming together. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay, dear. Bye, guys.
Goodbye. Thank you so much for joining us.
This was fabulous.
Pleasure. Seriously, anytime.